Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Terrence Talks Travel Uber Adventures. I'm your host, Terrence Zepke, and I'd like to welcome my guest, David Parker, who is a travel specialist with Mir Corporation. David's been on the show before, and he did such a great job that I've asked him to come back and talk about another trip that I think will be of interest to you adventure travelers. During the season, I've shared all kinds of adventures from across the globe, and in this episode, we're going to talk about a place that many of us probably can't find on the map. I know I had to look it up. And this is an area of the world I'm probably the least familiar with as far as having traveled to or researched or booked any trips with. So I'm happy to have my Russian expert here today. In fact, he just got back from this place. And what I'm talking about today is Uzbekistan. And that is just a fun word to say if I can get it right. So welcome back to the show, David.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's Uzbekistan, right?
Uzbekistan? Yeah, Uzbekistan. It's definitely a mouthful.
I know. And I've said it a million times without any problems, and then we get on the air, and that's when I flub it. So you know how it goes. But I want to mention before we go any farther that MirCor was established in 1986. And so they have a long track record here. They really know their stuff. In fact, several of their tours have been voted Tours of a Lifetime by National Geographic. And they specialize in travel to this part of the world. And I want to read a passage out of their catalog that I think sums up the experience beautifully. It says, Russia, the largest country on earth, is quite simply larger than life. So big and so diverse that an incomparable range of uniquely Russian experiences is possible in any season. Red Square in a light snowfall, St. Petersburg's glowing canals under a midnight sun, reindeer on the Kamchatka Peninsula, a resplendent table set for guests in a tidy Russian home, the almost tropical transparency of Lake Baikal's waters, the undeniable genius of the Hermitage, the vastness of the Tega streaming by the windows of a Trans-Siberian train, a horse-drawn sleigh skimming the snow like a scene out of Dr. Zhivago. These are Russia's treasures, featured in our phenomenal array of itineraries. So I really like that, David. So let's get down to it. David, can you tell us, the trip we're going to talk about today is called Caravan Across Uzbekistan. So tell us a bit about the length of this trip, the departure dates, and the kind of specifics.
Okay, so this is one of our scheduled group tours, and it can run with a minimum of 2 travelers, and the maximum is 12, so it's not, you know, an enormous group, which I think is great for moving around, especially a more remote country like Uzbekistan. And we have 2 departure dates. One is starts May 22nd and runs until June 5th, and the other is in the fall, September 11th to 25th. And this is primarily because, you know, early summer or early fall is a good time to visit Uzbekistan because it is located in a very hot, dry climate, so you want to avoid the heat. And overall, the trip is 15 days, which I think is an excellent time to explore Uzbekistan, which is a little bit larger than the state of California in terms of area. It's got about 30 million people, but there's just a lot of different things to see in this country, which I admittedly did not know a lot about before, you know, I began to explore there myself, but I was really surprised at just how much history and natural beauty there is in the country.
Well, tell us what was the biggest shock or the biggest thing that you learned during your trip there.
I think as an American and growing up in America, you know, we almost never even hear the word, let alone think about Uzbekistan. But I really came away with the impression that this territory, a lot of it was really, it's located in the very center of Asia. It's one of only 2 countries in the world that's double landlocked, and that means that even all the countries that it borders are also landlocked, so you have to cross through 2 countries to get to the ocean. And so you would think that this country, you know, located in almost a desert climate, you know, far away from the ocean, would not have a large role in world history, but you see amazing ruins and really well taken care of remains of ancient civilizations, you know, from the time of Alexander the Great, and great empires such as Tamerlan the Great, whose empire was based in Samarkand, Uzbekistan, and he was a Turkic marauder who eventually conquered all the way to Baghdad, Iran. You know, he had a vast empire, and it was really for a while the center of the Silk Road, and really the crossing point from Europe and Asia for centuries.
Well, that's a good question for us here. Why don't you explain to everybody here, what does the Silk Road mean?
The Silk Road, actually, I learned it was a term that was invented not too long ago at the end of, well, relatively, at the end of the 19th century by a German archaeologist and explorer. But what it refers to is not just silk, but a series of routes that went from China and India up to Russia, to Venice, to Istanbul, and basically for until really the invention of sea travel. You know, if you think about the Portuguese explorers and Magellan and circling the globe, for a long time it was really the only way to get things from Asia to Europe was overland. And Uzbekistan was located right in the heart of that, the Silk Road.
All right, so why is it called, this trip, why is it called caravan across Uzbekistan?
You know, this trip, a large part of it is overland vehicle travel, and I think that it really traces a lot of the routes of those ancient caravans that moved goods, silk, tea, gold, jade from the Orient to the Western world. So I'd like to think that this trip, you know, is in the spirit of those ancient trade route caravans moving across the
desert. Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Okay, so the first stop that you make is at Fergana Valley, which I understand is supposed to be the heart of Uzbekistan. So just maybe you could tell us what participants will see here and what they'll do. I understand there's a lot of handmade items that people can acquire here as souvenirs. Is that right?
Yes, the Fergana Valley, that is it's one of the most fertile places in Central Asia, especially in Uzbekistan. So whereas most of the country is very dry, this has you know, trees and crops, so it's always been a very populated area for centuries, actually millennia. And the real specialty of the Fergana Valley is ceramics, and there are some beautiful. They like to use a blue color ceramics and pots that can be found. I definitely picked up some while I was in Uzbekistan, and they're now proudly sitting in my kitchen. So it's a wonderful place for shopping and just to see all, you know, millennia of settlement in the desert.
Okay. So then you go on to, now I'm not sure how to say this, Samarkand. And so I'm just wondering, what will you see here? What are the highlights here? And how do you say it?
I say Samarkand.
Ah,
but,
okay.
You know, I unfortunately I speak Russian a little bit, but not Uzbek. So Samarkand, it was the capital of the empire of Tamerlan the Great. So he was a Muslim ruler. And he took, it's actually breathtaking. There's a central plaza in Samarkand called the Registan, which is one of the largest open public squares in the world. But, you know, I had never heard of it before. I had actually been there. And it's just an enormous open space with the beautiful mosques and minarets using this this classic blue-tiled architecture. And the tile work, you know, it's so impressive from far away because it's enormous. You know, it's such a grand, majestic imperial capital, but then when you get up close to the buildings and you really look at the detail on the tile work, it's equally as impressive. So Samarkand, you know, it's an ancient city. Alexander the Great was there, but really now it's known as the former capital of a great empire of Tamerlan the Great.
Well, you know, when I was looking at this trip, the first thing that came to my mind with a background in photography is that this seems like this would be a photographer's dream. This kind of trip with so much color and architecture and, you know, variety of stuff, because on top of all these ancient towns with all these beautiful colors and valleys and oasis and all that, you've got the desert that you go into at one part in the trip here. And you have to forgive me if I butcher these names here, but the Kazakum Desert to me sounds like an adventure traveler's dream. I mean, you know, you're talking about, and a photographer's dream, you're talking about red sand and camping under the stars, and you're gathered around a campfire and a real yurt camp, And so this just sounds like just a great experience. And so why don't you tell us exactly what a yurt camp is and what this is about?
So a yurt is a traditional nomadic dwelling, and it's common across Central Asia from Mongolia to Uzbekistan and up to Kazakhstan. And it's a circular, almost like a tent, that's held up by a crisscrossing network of wooden, flexible wooden poles, so it can be taken down and set up quickly. And it's ideally suited for moving quickly and following, grazing animals across the whatever grass does grow in the desert, or especially in drier climates, between a desert and the forest, it's grass is the primary crop, so it's well suited for that. And it's just an incredible experience to sleep in one, right out in the desert where the night sky is so close and the stars are so bright.
Yeah, I mean, that just sounds great to me. But I have to tell you, I think that the last half of the trip sounds like the best part to me. When you go into Bakara, which is an ancient city, I mean, we're talking about 2,500 years old. I mean, here in America, it's hard to relate to that. But that's just incredible. And I'm picturing in my mind what it must look like. But maybe you can tell us a bit, having been there, what you'll see, what it's like.
Right. Bukhara was the primary city of the southern Silk Road route, and it's occupied that position, as you said, for, over 2.5 millennia. So that's, if America just got past its 250-year anniversary, or it's approaching, then, it's 10 times that. And you really feel the ancientness of the city. It's in a more dry climate, so it's, speaking of photography, the sunsets are beautiful, probably because there is still some dust in the air. It's a dry climate, so there's these really bright, vivid sunsets over these ancient buildings. And, Bukhara is also famous for its Suzani, which are a type of embroidered needlework, and they make excellent tablecloths, and they're just beautiful, bright colors with pomegranates and chili peppers stitched into them, and it's just really an ancient living city.
Yeah, I just think that would be just a really incredible experience here. But the next thing that you do on this itinerary, I have to tell you, I'm a bit curious about this. It says you actually go to an oasis. And I have to say, I'm curious, what exactly is this? And does an oasis have a practical purpose?
I think, even today, in the desert, an oasis, you think, well, people can fly or people can drive, but it does definitely today, it's still relevant in this country, which is not really densely populated, where any kind of shelter is few and far between. And I think it's great to see just the difficulties of living, and not only living but thriving in this harsh climate, because in America it's mostly a temperate climate, and we have well-developed road systems and airports and networks of trains, but in Uzbekistan, something like an oasis becomes very important, especially in the height of the summer.
Well, what is it? Are there buildings? Is it just a water source? Is this like Motel 6? I mean, I'm just trying to get a handle on this.
It can be anywhere from just a few buildings, on the side of the road to an entire city. But, the oasis is always revolved around a source of water, whether underground or with a nearby river.
So very much relevant today, very much necessary, a very, very practical thing today, you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you are referring to Hiva specifically, it was an ancient oasis, but it grew because of its position as an oasis into something much more. And that city of all the cities on the itinerary, I think, is the most well preserved. Whereas there's an ancient wall, and once you're inside the wall, it's like stepping back centuries. There's ancient, there's minarets, and people will walk by in traditional clothing, with long beards and very strange, strange to our eyes, these strange hats that have a lot of shaggy fur, but that's actually to beat the heat. And Hiva, to me, was one of the most impressive cities on the itinerary just because it was so consistent. It was really like stepping back in time when you were there, once you got through those ancient
walls. Again, you're sending off all the bells in the photographer's head right now, I'm thinking,
right.
with all
yes,
these,
it was,
you know, great
yes,
dreams.
It was, yeah, it was
okay, well, tell
you
us
know,
about the forbidden. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, no.
I was just going to say, I want you to tell us here before we run out of time, I want to hear about this forbidden art that you go to see in Nucas. Is that it?
Yes, and that was, to me, one of the most unique museums I've ever been to. You know, and I don't think there's hardly any museums like that in the world. It's an incredible story where a Russian archaeologist was, his family were noblemen, so he was oppressed after the Soviets took power. And so he was forced to work as a sketch artist on an archaeological dig in this really distant region of Nukus. And he started collecting local art and the local clothing and jewelry of the local people, the Karl Kalpak people, which are ethnically different from Uzbeks in Uzbekistan. And he started using the collection that he had to make a museum. But then the most amazing part was that he never forgot about his ambitions as an artist, and he started collecting avant-garde art from Russian artists and put them in his museum, which was extremely difficult to do because, you know, the Soviets controlled art very closely, and they banned all non-official art, and he had a whole museum full of non-official art in the middle of the desert. And the only reason why it was never shut down was because it was so far away from Moscow, so, you know, so hard to reach, that it was sort of a secret treasure trove of forbidden art. And it survived to this day, and it's a beautiful museum, and there's really stunning pieces of artwork there. But, you know, in many ways, the story of the museum is just as impressive as the collection.
Isn't that something? Wow. Okay, so tell us about lodging. Are these three-star hotels? Or are you staying? How will people be staying throughout this trip? Where will they be staying?
For this trip, they're mostly three-star hotels. And after just getting back and having stayed in them myself, you know, they're not, because it is Uzbekistan, it's a distant location. You know, you can't expect total luxury,
right.
But you know, they're. I think that they were definitely solid three-star. They're good hotels. You know, quiet, safe, clean, and you know, the staff were very friendly, which is actually sometimes an anomaly in the former Soviet Union. Customer service is definitely coming along at a different rate than in the United States, but I found that the staff were friendly and efficient. The food was excellent, and the location, I think for a lot of our travelers, location is the most important thing, and the locations are always right in the center of the city.
That is an important thing. And you did mention something else I was going to ask about. I was curious about the cuisine. Now, I'm assuming throughout this trip, there's Russian cuisine. That's just what I assumed. But then I saw on your itinerary something about participants will be served Uzbek specialties at some point. So they have their own kind of cuisine, I assume. So what can you tell us about that? What could people expect?
You know, the Uzbeks, they eat a lot of meat, and I found it, you know, if you're a meat eater, then it was really good meat. I think partly because they don't have mass farms, you know, or you know, a lot of chemicals. They just don't have the infrastructure, so you know, the meat was grass fed just by default and roamed free on across the desert. And then the real Uzbek specialty is a dish called plov, which comes from a similar word as pilaf, and it's rice cooked with all sorts of different ingredients, you know, whether it's mutton or raisins, and every city has its own variation. Every family too has its own variation, and it's really delicious food. Uzbek bread is a very important part of their culture. It's more of a flat bread, and it's delicious and also beautiful to look at because they press these intricate designs into the bread so that the steam can escape. But it really creates a beautiful meal as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it sounds like people won't go hungry during this trip.
No, yeah.
Picky eaters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There's also a lot of variety that's in terms of fruits and vegetables. And especially on a longer trip like this where you can get used to the local food, then if you can have a chance to try, you know, pomegranates, melons, even quince. I don't know if you've heard of a fruit called quince. I'd never heard of it before, but
yeah.
I had lots. Yeah, lots of quince in Uzbekistan. So.
Okay. Well, tell me, David. I'm curious. There's a lot of countries that end in Stan,
mm-hmm.
such as Turkmenistan, Pakistan, Kazakhstan. On and on. And if you could only go to one Stan, would Uzbekistan be your recommendation?
I think it's very difficult to say. I don't want to disparage any other countries, but I really think Uzbekistan has, just in one country, so much history, because a lot of their neighbors, especially Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, they have really spectacular natural beauty, because they had a nomadic population moving around all the time, they don't have these beautiful architectural monuments that survive, because Uzbekistan did have settled empires and capital cities and trade oases. It's a lot more built up in that sense. It has much more of a settled history, and I think that it just creates so many beautiful and awe-inspiring sights to see in Uzbekistan.
Okay, so if you were going on this trip and you wanted to do something else while you're in this part of the world, is there an extension that you'd recommend onto this trip?
We have a lot of different tours to Central Asia. We have ones that go to all five of the Soviet stans. That's Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and Turkmenistan, as well as ones that connect with Western China, which is a very remote, very undervisited part of the world. And then we also have trips that even connect from Turkmenistan onto Iran. So there's just so many different options, whether you'd like to see more culture or whether you'd like to see more natural beauty, then I think Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan would be worth visiting. But they're all nearby, and they're all, we've tried to figure out, it's our job to figure out, the best way to get from place to place and to navigate all the different land crossings and border crossings. So we have lots of different itineraries depending on whether you want, more adventure or more comfort, less driving, more driving. There's a lot of options.
Okay. So is there anything else, before we run out of time here, that you would like to say to people that might be considering going that they would need to know? Anything you'd like to add?
I just wanted to just reemphasize just how surprised I was by Uzbekistan, not just by the history, but also really by the friendliness of the people there. They were genuinely interested to see me and to see everyone in our group. One funny thing was I'm half Japanese, and a lot of the local people thought I was Uzbek because, it's in the middle of Asia, so it's kind of, they don't
okay.
really quite look, East Asian, they don't really look European, they look Central Asian, so that was a funny thing that happened to me on the trip.
Okay, well, so I guess that's about all the time we have today, so I'm just going to advise everyone, if they want more information about this itinerary, or any of the other great trips offered by MiraCorps, including there are some different options to go into Uzbekistan. You can find all that on their website, which is www.mircorp.com, MiraCorps.com. And I'll have a link to Mira on my site, as well as lots of other free travel reports and resources. And you can find out more about other episodes of this show and see my trip pick of the week at www.terrencetalkstravel.com. And so that's it for this show. I'd like to thank David for graciously coming back and sharing another Uber adventure with us. And remember, I'll be back soon with another episode of Terrence Talks Travel, Uber Adventures, so stay tuned.